Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
He would appear in the dark.
Hunting, literally hunting.
He was a killer.
World of Secrets, Season 3, The Apartheid Killer. Listen now, wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Estás escuchando The Fifth Floor.
The Fifth Floor dinliyorsunuz. Bizimle kalın.
Tumya Ektay, The Fifth Floor, Farnak Amidi Sobat.
This is The Fifth Floor, at the heart of global storytelling with BBC journalists from all around the world. I'm your host, Farnak Amidi. If you've ever met me, you might agree with our producer, Caroline, that I'm quite a colorful person. I agree with her. I love wearing bright colors. I have colorful tattoos and I plan to get more. I wear a lot of statement accessories and I never leave the house without wearing my bright red lipstick. I just love makeup. I'm also from Iran, a country ruled by a very conservative Islamic regime. Growing up there, expressing my sense of fashion could and did get me in trouble with the so-called morality police. But it is not just the regime that imposes strict rules on fashion for women. Many religious and traditional people also frown upon women wearing makeup or wearing bright colors. So in this episode, I'm going to talk to two of my colleagues about how women's fashion and makeup function in conservative countries and how women use these as tools of rebellion. I'm joined by fellow Iranian Mina Joshagani and Bella Hassan from Somalia.
Hello.
Welcome, ladies.
Hello, ladies. Thank you for having me. So exciting.
I know. I really look forward to this conversation. And you both look great. Are you girls wearing any makeup today?
Oh, no. I just rolled out of bed like this. Come on. No, definitely. I love my makeup. I'm always wearing makeup.
I am in my skincare era, so I'm taking care of my skin. Less makeup for me and more glow from my natural skin.
And you are glowing.
Yeah, true.
So, since we're talking about makeup, what are the attitudes to makeup in Somalia, especially in a city like Mogadishu where you grow up?
Well, that is a very interesting question, a much-needed question that I really was waiting to answer. But before I get into that, what is the attitude like? I want to explain to you how Somalia has changed throughout, you know, these years. Before 1991, Somalia was a country that loved, you know, freedom of women. Women were free. You will see bright, full colors, women with afro hair, curly hair, faces full of makeup, lots of red lipstick, great eyeshadow and stuff like that. And I looked at my mom's pictures from the 1980s and it was so beautiful. Shadow eye makeup, everything. And I asked my mom, "Mom, what happened? Because right now, I don't see that. Women, yes, still wear makeup, but they get judged for it." And that is because of the security and the political situation in my country has been changing a lot. So after 1991, we go to 2004, where there was a transitional government, which was federal in Somalia. People were very hopeful. We were like, okay, this is going to be where we are going to flourish and go back to how we used to be. Because at that time, it was we were going through a lot of wars. There was a civil war, warlords. It was so unsafe. So families started covering up their girls. Like if you're a woman, you were supposed to cover up so that people don't look at you, mm-hmm. so that men don't desire you.
Yeah.
But that still didn't save Somali women. And then we have the religious revolution, and they started imposing these religious extreme beliefs on women. You need to cover up or you will go to hell. Mm. And then in 2012, things got better. It was relatively safe in Somalia, but the religion aspect is still there.
Yeah.
But now, in 2024, we see that even though there's a lot of sheikhs and people in Somalia who are religiously very extreme, Gen Z women are like, you know, taking the lead of taking control of their lives. And if you go to TikTok and Instagram, you will see endless videos of girls doing skincare, makeup tutorials. And I was so happy when I saw that.
Yeah, what wow. she was saying when she was talking about all of this political turmoil in Somalia and how women take the brunt of most of this and they are policed. It reminds me a lot of Iran, doesn't it, to you?
Exactly. When Bella was speaking, I was thinking a lot of it is mutual when you talk about how the significant political events change how women can present themselves in society. Like we have the Islamic Revolution in 1979 in Iran, and before that people were basically choosing whatever they want to wear and whatever. However, even back then, I assume there was value given to women based on how they present themselves. So it would be a makeup or wearing your hair or, you know, in Iran, it was more for married women, for a certain class of society. And even with makeup, you could even say what kind of social class or status do these people have? But then after the revolution, I feel when people were forced to cover their hair or their bodies and the fashion was really restricted, it became more a kind of expressing yourself or rebellion. I think after revolution and with compulsory hijab, there are less ways to express yourself. So you kind of focus on whatever you got and you have to work with the face and the little bit of hair that you're showing.
I wanted to mention something very quick about my culture as well.
Yes.
The Somali culture has been embedded with religion, you know, right now in the current situation that we are in. And a lot of people think that religion is actually our culture. But if you go back, like, we are more than that. We are people who have existed for centuries. We have ancient beauty secrets, makeup that women have been using hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And while Gen Z women are like taking the lead in, you know, this rule of revolution of, you know, taking control of your life and wearing makeup and even red lipstick, which I talked about, that's really like really.
Did you ever wear red lipstick?
I did in university. Ooh. It was a form of protest because I was called into the dean's office and I was told that I was having a bad influence on other girls and I should stop wearing makeup. And next day I turn up with a red bright lipstick.
Let's go, Bella. It's trouble.
I know.
Trouble from Mogadishu.
No one tells me what to wear.
Yeah.
And okay. I wasn't really against my dean. I could have listened to him, but it was like he said that, you know, it's always better to not get attention from the boys. And I refused to listen to that because my life doesn't revolve around men, what they look at and what they want. I'm more than that.
Hey, hallelujah. Yeah, I love that. I love that. Yeah, it is a form of protest, I would say. I used to get a lot of trouble and punishments, honestly. I remember, like, especially, I don't know what it was that is really significant. Farnak, you know it. We are going to talk about it because there's just no avoiding this. The eyebrow game.
Oh,
and I didn't even necessarily need to do much with my eyebrows. But because we were told, like, you can't, and there was a lot of emphasis on it,
Can I ask why? Why the eyebrows are really very significant in Iranian culture?
Look, you could tell if a woman is a virgin, if a woman is
That's
married.
That's what they would say.
They would say. Historically, you would be able to tell if a woman has plucked eyebrows or, you know, the unibrow, the stereotypical Iranian Persian unibrow. If you have gotten rid of it,
it means you're married. You're not a virgin.
Exactly.
So if you weren't married, so at school, what they used to do was to line us every morning before going to class. Then they would come and they would check your nails, your facial hair, my generation was also your socks. You weren't allowed to wear colorful socks or socks that had pink bows or anything on them. You had to wear all black. And they would check your nails so you don't have any nail polish, you don't have long nails. But most importantly, your facial hair. So you weren't allowed to get rid of your facial hair. And Iranian women they have dark hair mostly and dark facial hair. And when you're a teenager, you know, your hormones are all over the place.
It's a full mustache situation.
Yeah. So girls had mustaches, they had unibrows, and, you know, they wanted to get rid of it, and they would. And then you would get in trouble because this unibrow, if it was a sign of your virginity, and your virginity is super valuable in that culture.
All the shame.
You have to hold on to it until you get married, until your wedding day. So it was a very big taboo, and you would get punished for it. You could get kicked out of school, suspended. Yeah. Even in the neighborhood, people would be talking about you just because you got rid of your facial hair.
I was in and out of the dean's office, and I was disciplined, and I was suspended, and all of that. But it was also within my home because, you know, the men in your country, in a kind of conservative,
patriarchal
society, like that was the kind of family I was grown up in. And my brother took a big, huge issue with that.
So it's that policing of women's bodies in the society, in countries like Iran, by the government, by the society, and by the family. So it's the state, the street, and the home. Yeah. That are trying to police women.
And it's all about control. It's all about control. It's not about, I remember I was asking, why can't I, what does it have to do with school if I'm shaving my arm hair? And we were always told from the teachers or, you know, principals that it's because you have to keep a modest look and focus on your studies. And this is not, you don't have to be distracted. You don't need to be distracted with all of this. But at the end of the day, I think it was about control. Mm. We tell you what to wear. And so you don't have to think about those things. Then you learn that you don't have to think about a lot of things.
Exactly.
It's decided for you, you know. Just do this.
And that's why makeup for all three of us was a sort of makeup and fashion for me, just expressing myself, was kind of protest, no?
Yeah.
All
of
us. Just saying no to that authority that wanted to police you, no? Mm. So where do people get their beauty standards or ideals from? Because when I was growing up, it was a lot in Iran, it was a lot influenced by Bollywood for a while. And then it was, of course, Madonna. Everybody looked like Madonna. Like, you look at family pictures, all the aunts and moms, and everyone looks like Madonna. And then later on, when satellite dishes came and MTV, we all wanted to look like the girls on MTV. Now, what are they following? Do you know? Do you have the pulse of who is doing what and what are the main ideals?
Oh, like, it's just, I am scared to repeat the same thing, but it's so many Kardashians. Like, it's just, everybody looks like that. Like, it's the hair.
Okay. I agree.
Well, one positive thing is that I think generally the population is more accepting of, like, all kinds of looks. Mm. I do see that. Like, if you're beautiful, but you still have to be beautiful or, you know, fancy and glam. But if you are blonde or you have black hair, you're straight or curly and stuff, like, it's the same thing. You're beautiful.
But in my culture, like, there's nothing called acceptance. Like, we have a very strict,
really?
Specific beauty standard.
Wow.
Okay. And it's like,
what is it?
I'm very ashamed to say this, but something that we inherited from the colonial era. And it's like
closer based, to the white people.
Yeah. Oh. And we have this epidemic of women bleaching their skin. Oh. And I just wish that it stops.
It can happen?
Yes.
Yeah, these products, which are also quite dangerous. Apparently.
It's really very dangerous. Like a lot of, you know, you will see a lot of women bleaching their skin and straightening their hair. So people usually have curly hair. I had a curly hair. My mom had a curly hair. But the thing is that everyone straightens their hair and everyone bleaches their skin. But here's like where we're different from the Western culture. But then they also want to look curvy.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's curvy. The Kardashian aspect, I think. Yeah.
And they even take pills, medication, homemade remedies, food that they believe that will grow your bum and stuff like that. Wow. I don't know if I'm, you know,
what kind of food can target your bum?
I think we can say bottom.
Yeah, bottom.
You're behind it. Yeah.
So would you say that attitudes towards makeup have changed in, for instance, in Somalia? And why is it, in your opinion, Bella, that if it has changed a little?
I would say the attitude hasn't changed, but the people who want to do the makeup has changed.
The women have changed.
Yeah, the women have changed. You have a generation of people like me who don't care about what the uncles and the aunties are saying. And if you're someone like me who's from an African household and, you know the amount of judgment that your family members and relatives will give you. For example, if I go with a face full of makeup to an event, everyone will call my mom and my dad and they will tell them, so your daughter did that. Are you happy about it?
They have a bulletin. Who's bulletin?
Yeah. And they will even feel free to add, you know, extra news in there. She looked like this. She looked like
some
that.
Fiction.
And they will predict the future. Like, we don't see a bright future ahead of her.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's like what held, you know, a lot of girls like me back, you know, because we are very afraid of the backlash, not for me, but for my family. And as I said, in my culture, religion plays a big role.
Yeah.
And every time people will bring up God. But what's really funny to me is that I'm from a country that has been torn apart by war. They don't look at the men who are killing, raping, destroying, stealing, and remind them of God. But the moment they see a little girl wearing a red lipstick, they will remind her of God and make sure to tell her that she's going to hell.
It's women having the burden of the decency of the whole society and the reputation of the family on their shoulders. You are the one carrying it. Yeah. You're responsible for the decency of the society and everything. What about in Iran? Do you believe that? I think that even the regime's way of handling makeup has changed when it comes to Iran.
I totally agree with you. We have the same things that somewhat like Bella is saying. And when I am talking about Iran and my experience, I have to give that like disclaimer that I was born and raised in Tehran in a middle class family. So it's got a lot to do with what I was allowed and what I was seeing around me and what I was like being told. And even for me, it was a big issue with my conservative family. But I fully appreciate that in a more suburban places and more religious areas in the country is totally different. And Iranian society is very polarized as well. But the way the regime has also been handling it has changed. I remember I was too young then, Farhanak, but I remember my aunties when I was like a really small kid, there was such thing as committee.
Oh yeah,
it was like the morality police, but yeah, you know,
but
it was like
scarier. I think it was committee of the IRGC militias.
Yeah, yeah, it was
they
like
were
a
extremely
more
scary.
It was crazy back then too. I remember my auntie would hide her lips.
Yeah,
you
got
yeah, like you go like this. You can't see, but you know what I'm saying. You would just go hide your lips or your nail polishes when you get to the comité.
Or even
people,
going to like, the mall, you yeah. had to wear gloves.
Yeah, yeah, you would
so
wear
that you wouldn't show your nail polish.
But now we have crazy makeups. Now it seems the regime is just like, just put on that headscarf. Just put the headscarf on and do whatever yeah. you want with the rest.
Women have pushed back so many yeah. of these restrictions. That they're not even wearing the compulsory hijab anymore. So the authorities are just trying to keep the hijab on.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
right now they don't really care about makeup that much because not only makeup, they don't even care about colorful clothes.
No, you're right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because when I was growing up, when I was younger, you couldn't wear colorful clothes.
You couldn't.
Yeah, it was very taboo. You had to wear dark black, gray, yeah. navy blue colors like that. And it was very, very, every time, you know, when I was
plain and low key
yeah,
was the
when you were a teenager, like the only places you could go to was a pizza parlor or the mall. And you would go and there would be these vans of morality police standing, just waiting yeah. for you to get there. And if you showed a strand of hair, if you had a bit of nail polish, if your jeans were too bright.
Or I think jeans were taboo yeah. too. Just wearing jeans. Yeah.
yeah, you couldn't wear jeans. So yeah, it's quite dark times. I mean, you're absolutely right. I think times are changing.
We've come so far.
And the credit is to women mostly, rather 100%. Than actually the system changing or the belief system changing. It's women just pushing these boundaries.
I agree. But also, it has been part of women, the ones who were holding that system.
Exactly.
Because in my culture, I remember very well when I was in Somalia that majority of the people who were supporting, like, you know, young girls shouldn't wear makeup, they shouldn't wear, like, you know, bright full colors, were women.
Yeah. Or the yeah. aunties and the grandmothers.
Yes, yes. The aunties and the grandmothers. Like, most of them were really imposing those beliefs on us. I think that the fight with the system is easy, but when you see faces that look like yours, that you have respect for, someone that looks like your mom, your auntie, your grandma, it's harder to fight them.
That's such a good point you made, Bella. That's actually a really, really good observation. And yes, unfortunately, it is like that women uphold the system.
Yeah.
And a lot of them do it out of fear because they fear that if they don't do it, you are going to pay a price for it.
You are listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
He was a kind of vigilante killer.
He killed at least 19 people during the 1980s in South Africa.
Very dark times.
People were desperate. We were looking for him. We couldn't find him. And nobody knew where he was.
Every single one of his victims was black.
He reached such a stage where he was now hunting.
World of Secrets from the BBC World Service. Season 3, The Apartheid Killer. Search for World of Secrets wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
I'm Farhanak Hamidi. In this episode of The Fifth Floor, we are hearing about makeup in Iran and Somalia.
You know, when we are talking, we see how the state, the street, and the home are policing women. And Bella, I know you have a story about your mom being stopped from actually getting on a plane because of her makeup.
Yes, I think it was in 2006. And it was really like one of the most difficult period of times in Somalia, where there was a huge war between the Islamic courts, which were a group of like independent, you know, sheikhs and people who came together trying to get rid of the warlords. And then, you know, the US and their allies came and invaded Somalia because they wanted to stop them. So at that time, Al-Shabaab was there. They were embedded within the Islamic courts, but they weren't as, you know, prominent as they are right now. you know, they weren't out yet.
Yeah.
They were still in the closet.
Living in the shadows.
Yeah. So my mom was trying to get into a plane to get us visas to, like, Netherlands so that we can flee the war. And one of the Al-Shabaab members stopped my mom because she was wearing a red lipstick. And he told her she's not going to board in the plane unless she takes off her lipstick and wears something that, you know, covers her body in a proper way.
Yeah.
Mind you, my mom at that time was fully covered from head to toe, but he wanted her to wear something even bigger.
Looser.
Looser and bigger. Yeah, have you seen the Afghani women?
Yeah,
like, they wear something that covers all of their body.
Yeah.
They wanted her to wear something like that. So, like, my mom stood up to that man and she told him, I'm not taking off my lipstick and you're not going to stop me from, you know, boarding that plane. You can, like, try to stop me. Even if you want, you can kill me, but you're not going to stop me. Do whatever you want.
Wow.
Your actions are up to you and mine are up to me. And he couldn't say anything.
She just got on the plane. Bella's mom.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now we know where you get it from.
Let's go.
Yeah. And let me mention, my mom is the first feminist that I met.
I'm the same. My mom is the same, actually. I learned a lot from her. So, you know, we talked about all of the problems and how women are being controlled and everybody's scared of women having freedom to wear what they want to wear. What do you think the solution is? Of course, to a large extent, women themselves. But what else?
I think teaching women to love themselves should be, you know, the first point to start from. Mm. Because I am from a society that, from the time I was 5 years old, I felt that I was hated. I'm going to be honest with you. The way that our society treated women, I felt hated. Even when I was young, I knew that there was something wrong. So my mom...
You don't feel proud of being a woman.
Yes, of being a woman.
It's always a sense of shame.
Yeah.
You feel like you're burdened to your family.
Yeah.
You need to protect their bride and honor and whatever. And it's always you who needs to peer all of that. And you don't feel appreciated. Even when you do as they want, they still have something to complain about. Until one day when I was 15, my mom told me, forget about them and do what makes you happy. And that was the moment I started to break out of this cycle. Yeah. And I was like, I think I found myself.
Wow.
And I think teaching women to love themselves is the biggest favor that we can do for them.
And teaching men. I think it also comes with teaching men. Even right now, as we have this movement, like we see on social media, people are talking about, women, you can have your body hair, you don't have to remove it and like the from the armpit or the leg. And these are the things that there is movement to advocate for that. But then there is an opposition coming most of the times from kind of macho men that are like, oh no, you only say curves are good now just because you cannot get skinny, or you only say this because you don't,
you're not attractive. You're
because you're not attractive. You have to basically change how you look to be attractive to men. Once you remove that out of the equation, like becoming attractive to men is no longer your goal. You can, I think, be happier with you.
Great advice, girls.
Yeah, and I feel very beautiful after this interview.
Yes,
boosting confidence.
Thanks to Mina Joshagani from BBC Persian and Bella Hassan from Focus on Africa.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Farina Kamidi, and the Fifth Floor team was Caroline Ferguson and Hannah Dean. The studio manager was Bob Nettles. You've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.
He was a kind of vigilante killer.
He killed at least 19 people during the 1980s in South Africa.
Very dark times.
People were desperate. We were looking for him. We couldn't find him. And nobody knew where he was.
Every single one of his victims was black.
He reached such a stage where he was now hunting.
World of Secrets from the BBC World Service. Season 3, The Apartheid Killer.
Search for World of Secrets wherever you get your BBC podcasts.